This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Holdsworth is the founder and the president at VirginiaTomorrow.com. He joins me Monday afternoons to talk a little Virginia politics. And Bob, we have news breaking today regarding Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli's continued effort to get his hands on some paperwork from a former UVA professor. What's the latest?
Well, the latest, Coy, is that Attorney General has reissued what's called the civil investigative demand, somewhat equivalent to a subpoena, to the University of Virginia, asking them to turn over some very specific records and emails that Professor Mann sent out while he was associated with the University of Virginia. It's a much shorter request than the first one that I think was about 15 pages. As far as I could see, there are two or three pages in this demand. Essentially, what the Attorney General argues is that that Professor Mann had work that had been seriously challenged and had shown, as he said, to have been methodologically faulty, and the Attorney General wants to see whether he used this work that had been challenged as a means of getting further grant money, which he suggests would be equivalent to fraud if that happened. My sense is that we're back in court here. I can't imagine that the University of Virginia is going to find this CID any more acceptable than the previous one. So what's happened, I think, is that the ante has essentially been doubled here.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. So this story certainly continues to give. I'm curious, at what point, in terms of the media battle and the battle of public perception, at what point does the Attorney General reach diminishing marginal returns on this effort? At what point do you think the public at large says, oh, come on, give it up? What are you doing? Why are you spending time on this?
Yeah, well, it doesn't appear that he's going to back down. I would be surprised if the judge who made the initial decision is going to alter that decision on the basis of what's not included or is included in the new CID. So the question is, how far do you want to take this through the court system? And I think the Attorney General, seriously believes here that Professor Mann should have altered the kind of arguments he was making for these grants on the basis of some of the criticism he saw. And I am certain that both UVA and the academic community are simply going to heighten and perhaps even escalate some of the rhetoric that they used against the Attorney General, given the specificity of these charges. Which essentially says that Professor Mann should have acknowledged and admitted that his original work was faulty, and that if he had proceeded with requesting grant funds on the basis of this original work, it's the equivalent of civil fraud. So my sense is that UVA is going to once again suggest that this is an attack on academic freedom, and we're going to be in the courts. Essentially until someone decides not to go further with it.
It's amazing. It is amazing. And will there? I wonder if there'll ever be a final accounting of the money spent in the Attorney General's office on this, just this specific project.
Well, I mean, clearly that's what many of his opponents on the Democratic side requested once and are going to request again. And essentially, what they've received so far is a sense that there's only limited dollars that have been dedicated to this. But clearly there's been considerable time. We've had in the past attorney generals who have been, on other sides of arguments with Virginia's flagship university. I can recall, the Wide Awake case where Jim Gilmore provided legal counsel from the state for the University of Virginia, but where the Attorney General's office sided with the plaintiff against UVA and essentially eventually won the court case. But this one is a pretty dramatic conflict between the university and the Attorney General's office, and it doesn't appear that it's going to subside anytime soon.
No, not at all. We're talking with Bob Holsworth. The website is virginiatomorrow.com, and our phone lines are open for you at 977-1070. Bob, what is the latest on the ABC privatization plan that the governor has advocated?
Well, you know, clearly the governor has made a couple of changes to the privatization plan, largely intended, I think, to try to take away the argument that it contains some hidden tax increase. And that, in fact, probably provides a little less revenue to the state from the privatization, and clearly some of his Democratic opponents are angered at that. But the big issue comes is what's the political decision now? Where is the governor going to go with this? His Regulatory Reform Commission approved the privatization plan today with three Democratic dissents, and the question is this a special session or is it going to go to the regular session? The governor said last week he's not going to go to the special session if he doesn't have the votes. And, you know, my sense right now, Coy, is that he probably doesn't have the votes. There's still a number of rural Republicans who have yet to express support for this. So I would guess that we're going to see this in the regular session rather than the special session. In the special session, you just simply have an up-and-down vote on privatization, and the governor is not going to take it to that if he's not going to win that vote. In a regular session, he may have a little more opportunity for horse trading and log rolling and gaining support by not directly appealing to people's feelings of privatization, but appealing to other interests that they might want to have further during the regular session.
We're talking with Bob Holsworth, and Eric is waiting patiently on the line. Eric, you're with Bob Holsworth. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on the previous discussion of Attorney General Cuccinelli's investigation regarding Michael Mann. You know, it's publicly funded research, and the question of fraud, I would think the public has the right to know, given the comments Professor Mann and the rest of his cadre of climate alarmists made on those emails that got released, which seemed to suggest that they were engaging in fraud. If you read all of the emails, and then you listen to the admissions of guys like Phil Jones, who have had to admit that a lot of their data was wrong and that they've deleted decades worth of climate data, that the Attorney General is taking a brave stand here in actually going after this research because it is publicly funded, and I, for one, want to know whether or not just Michael Mann, and not only him, but I'm sure there's others that have deliberately suppressed data to keep their grant money coming.
Yeah, Eric, thank you for the call. It's a terrific point. Bob, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a you know, it is certainly the claim of the opponents of the climate researchers that the research had been highly politicized, and in fact there is some evidence from from what I've read that clearly these climate researchers felt that they were also in a political environment, and I think they're probably is some legitimate concern about whether or not that influenced some of the way that this research was conducted. The different part of this, and what's kind of interesting, is that usually in academia, these kind of questions are resolved through internal committees of one sort or another, when you hear arguments about scientific misconduct. And, you know, I've seen academic committees over the years make arguments that individuals did engage in various kinds of scientific misconduct. They've had a couple of these internal and association-wide groups look into Michael Mann's research and says that whatever problems may have existed, that it doesn't reach the level of academic misconduct or fraud in any way. What the Attorney General is saying, however, is that that's not good enough, that basically he argues, particularly in the first CID, that climate research is in so many ways a closed union shop, and that if you don't agree with it or if you raise serious questions about its methodology, you're just kind of excluded from, you know, from the club, you might say. And so what he's saying is that because the academic community can't be trusted to police its own in this regard, and because these dollars are federal dollars in the most part, though he says that there is some state money that was put into these federal applications, it's his duty to bring up a question of fraud that the academic community is reluctant to handle. And he may well have a point there, that certainly it is the Attorney General's job to look at fraud where it occurs in the Commonwealth of Virginia. The difficulty that he has is that, by and large, this is not the typical way these questions have been handled within the academic community, and there is absolutely no doubt that the defenders of academic norms are going to see this as a politically motivated activity on the part of the Attorney General. He's certainly willing to fight this part of the culture war, something that a lot of other people, including many conservatives, would be reluctant to fight. But it's going to be very, very interesting how it plays out. So my sense for the caller is that I think he's clearly a defender of the Attorney General. He sees this, sees the world probably very much as the Attorney General does, that this academic climate research community has engaged in is a closed shop, has highly politicized its own research, feels itself under assault, and that he finds what the Attorney General is doing to be appropriate. My sense is that the University of Virginia is going to respond in exactly the same way, if not even more strongly, than it responded to the first CID.
We are talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. We've got 11 minutes in front of the hour of 5 p.m., 61 degrees in Charlottesville. Bob, let me get back to ABC privatization, if I can. Where are all the folks in the General Assembly who, last time I checked, were right of center conservatives, proud conservatives? Where are they, and why aren't they standing up saying, you know, the state has no business being in the liquor business? Is it just a matter that they've gotten used to this revenue stream and they don't want to get rid of it?
Well, I mean, part for conservatives, I think it's partially that, but probably not primarily that, Coy. There's different kinds of conservatism. There's what I call the economic conservatism and the libertarian conservatism that basically argues, as George Allen did last week, that the state has no business in the liquor, selling liquor. It's not something that the private sector should be doing. The Virginia Chamber of Commerce said much the same today as well, that, clearly this is an activity that is better run by the private sector than by the state. On the other hand, there's a kind of social conservatism, often associated with, Republicans, and often associated, sometimes regionally, with people in the rural areas rather than the urban areas, you might say. And basically what this says is that if there's going to be any sin that's going on in the Commonwealth, it's best for the state to have a monopoly on it because we can control the excesses that way. If you can control the number of liquor outlets, if you can control, the time of sale, if you can control the type of advertising, the pernicious effects of alcohol and its impact on communities and families are less likely to be felt. And if you take a look at the Republican Party, particularly the Republican Party in the House of Delegates, it has relatively few representatives from the, inner ring suburbs of Washington, D.C. It has very few kind of urban Republicans, but it's very, very strongly represented in what you might call the exurban and rural areas of Virginia. And I just think what these folks believe is that there's not a large sentiment in their communities, particularly among the people that they represent, that is pushing privatization of liquor sales. And that's the political challenge the governor faces. That,
well, and they're not working to create that and help foster that sentiment either.
No, I mean, and I think what the challenge for Governor McDonnell is that in some ways, the vast majority of members of his own party in the House aren't hearing from their constituents in large numbers, that we really need to privatize liquor sales. they may think it's a good idea or a bad idea, but they don't think it's the top priority for the state right now. And in some instances, they particularly don't want to go against the norms in their community. So my sense is that Governor McDonald may find a way to bring them over, but he's going to have to find a way that includes some kind of compromise and horse trading on issues they find important. And so it's unlikely that he's going to be able to call a special session in the next month and get legislative approval for this. He's going to have to find some way to work this out through the next assembly session.
There's been some speculation that he might be willing to allow or sign off on a small gas tax increase to get support among Democrats for privatization. You see that happening?
Not at a statewide level at all, Coy, because of the fact that if you take a look at this, Governor McDonald is obviously on a short list of any Republican vice presidential candidate in 2012. He just issued this audit last week of VDOT that said there was, you know, $1 billion in unspent money out there. My sense is that the last thing that Governor McDonald's going to do in the next year or so, is to post the T word on his chest and say, you know, I'm the kind of Republican who's willing to raise taxes, to pay for transportation. I think you're going to see a lot of other different ways of doing this, privatizing roads, maybe selling roads. You know, we've just seen that they're considering a proposal now to place a $4 to $6 toll on the Hampton Roads tunnel in order to extend it from 2 lanes to 4 lanes there. So I think you're far more likely to see those proposals than to see any concession on a statewide gas tax, because that would clearly put Bob McDonald in the tax camp, something that no Republican with any kind of national aspiration wants to do right now. And secondly, it's just not consistent with Bob McDonald's own personal ideology and point of view that he has. So there's a lot of people talking about it. I think it's a non-starter.
Bob, before we let you go, one of the most watched congressional races this year is right here in the 5th District in Virginia between incumbent Democrat Tom Perriello and Republican challenger Robert Hurt. Of course, Jeff Clark is an independent conservative candidate. What's your latest read on this race?
Well, you know, Tom Perriello, the Democratic National Committee keeps saying that it's an absolutely dead-even race. They keep, quote-unquote, releasing polls that show this. But when you ask them to actually provide the questions and the sample size and the methodology, they say, we won't give you that. So that's not a poll. That's kind of polaganda that they're playing here. And it may be closer than some of these public polls show. I think Tom Perriello is a great candidate, extraordinarily hardworking. You know, now he has the NRA endorsement. He's going to be a tough candidate, but it's a very difficult environment for Republicans. For Democrats right now, Larry Sabato at UVA's Crystal Ball last week put this race into the likely Republican camp. And I'd have to say I'd probably be there right now at the moment as well. Anything can change in a month, but it just seems to me this is a terrible environment in a district that's pretty much a moderate district to run as a Democrat who supports Barack Obama right now.
Virginia Politics every Monday with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, thank you so much, sir. Have a terrific week.
Yeah, you too, Coy. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.